everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Good evening, good afternoon, wherever and whenever and however you're listening. I'm Nicole Whitney, your host to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Earlier today, I was pre-taping for a Guests for the Soul segment, our show airing on April 11th, which, by the way, I have two guest spots still open for, and you can check out the details on newsforthesoul.com. In the meantime, I was talking to a very interesting person, Virginia Levy from mastersofsedona.com, an author and facilitator, psychic, and all kinds of things. We started talking, and every question I asked, the answers got more and more bizarre, where we ended up doing a full entire show. You are about to get the very first sneak preview airing of that entire interview and conversation right now. Here we go now to my earlier recorded conversation with Virginia Levy from mastersofsedona.com. Well, here we are. I've got your mastersofsedona.com is the website, right?
Right.
It's a very commanding title.
Yeah. It's only taken 10 years to get any recognition.
Okay, so today we're going to focus on the Vision Quest adventure that you have going on in Sedona, as well as your, was it recently released book?
Yeah.
Okay. Master Vision Quest Adventures. Oh boy, that just sounds so fun. And the Virginia's recently released book, The Master Key Keepers and the Doppelganger. My God.
Yeah.
There's a title.
It's a title and a half, and when it really gets out there, I mean, we really haven't done an official release, and I thought, you know what, let's just do it, because I've been kind of keeping it under wraps, and, you know, it's a matter of time to get it out there, but it's even more important that people understand that it's a real story. It's a true story. There's nothing that's been embellished. Nothing was taken out of context. It was all true and still is true. So, but getting the rest of the world to pay attention is going to be the trick.
10 years ago, you put this together. What motivated you and why the Vision Quest?
Well, 10 years ago, when I was shoeing horses full-time as a professional on the East Coast, I saw one of those back when they had the 900 psychic lines coming on and the commercials, and I saw a commercial and his voice spoke to me and said, "You're going to do that." And I sat there argued with the voice. I'm like, "No way, not no, but hell no, I am not doing that." And next thing I know, I'm doing it. And consequently, through a series of events, we translated, we went to creating the academy from that.
The Academy of Spiritual Self-Mastery.
Right, right. And that was created because somebody came up to me and said, "Well, do you have a weekend training?" And I was like, "Oh, give me 10 years. I might have a year-long training."
Wow.
Yeah, it's a 6,000-page training program. We built a Vision Quest based on the training itself because we're finding a lot more people would rather do one-on-one. And spending 4 days out in the cave after some real intensive work. We do like a day and a half of serious intensive prep work. Then we put them out in the cave for the 4 days and basically turn them loose with the universe. And that way, we're not getting in the way. You know, we're not trying to direct it. We're not trying to tell them what to do or how to do it. But when they come out, the difference between a Vision Quest program like what we have and say, a traditional Vision Quest, aside from the survival rate being much higher, is that a lot of people died on the Vision Quest back in the traditional way. I don't know if many people realize that, but it's a very brutal awakening or form of connecting with the universe. But what happens with us is that we unplug people from the world of illusions and plug them into their higher source, their higher self, or into God, so to speak. and basically show them how they can literally, with a thought, manifest, you know, change the water into wine, or make the sun rise up in the west. And when, you know, like everybody's seen The Secret, and now that's all the rage, and everybody's talking about the laws of attraction. But what they couldn't say in The Secret is because they were trying to direct it towards mass consciousness. But they couldn't say that the fact that an elephant really can show up in the middle of your living room is a real truth. They kind of glazed over that, but they didn't want to scare anybody. But you really do have that power. And as soon as people start to master it, and you got to do it on a small scale, you can't just go out there and bam, go manifesting or empowering every single thought that comes along. That would wreak total havoc. You know, we already got that going on. So you learn discipline. You learn to choose which thoughts you want to empower. And by taking 4 days off and going sitting in a cave, as crazy as that sounds, you actually obtain that level of discipline.
So you're talking about altering reality by your thoughts for real and in without boundaries?
Right. See, I will tell you, there is so much. The rabbit hole goes so deep that a lot of people don't realize how deep it goes. I have seen some of the most extraordinary and amazing things happen. For example, I'm not kidding about making the sun rise up in the west. I actually had this happen to me, and I had just gotten out here to Arizona, and this voice said, go and take a drive, and I'm like, where are we going? And this voice said, don't worry about it, I'll tell you when to stop. And I loaded up my daughter and my roommate and the birds and the dog, and we all went for a ride in the van, and we ended up in this valley behind a mountain, and the sun had already dropped down behind a mountain, and when it did, it was the first time I'd ever really seen Arizona, and I waited all my life to get here. And I was doing a prayer, and while I was doing the prayer, I said, God, you know, I'd give anything for 45 more minutes of daylight. There was not a cloud in the sky. This was no mistaking what took place. No sooner did I say that in my mind and just let it go. And the next thing I know, my shadow, which was already way out in front of me, it was dusk, it started to shorten up, and all of a sudden, everything got brighter. And I spun around, and I looked, and I saw the sun rising up in the west. And my roommate looked at me, and this is Gene, I wrote about him in my story, he goes by the name of Arthur, and he goes, you did that. And I looked at him, and I said, no, I didn't. I'm innocent. And I knew I had. And for 45 minutes, the sun just went up over the mountain. And I just sat there and I stared at him, like, are you guys seeing this? And my daughter said, yeah, of course I see it. And Gene was like, yeah, I see it too. And I said, good, because I really think at this moment, if you weren't seeing this too, I thought I lost my mind.
Well, that's the very nature of these things. Once we have these experiences, then we question the validity. Now, other than the people that were with you, did anybody else, you know, anything weird in the news the next day? Did anybody see that?
We checked, and no. And I was asking people, and they thought I was absolutely crazy. I was like, y'all notice the sun doing anything? And they're like, no, why? I said, never mind. You'd have known. And because I wanted somebody else to validate it, outside of my own experience of reality. And the only thing that I had that validated that was after when the sun stopped, it took 45 minutes for it to go back down and disappear behind the mountain. And we jumped in the van. We're like, okay, we're out of here. See ya. And I got in the van and I said to the universe, to this voice, and I call it the universe because I don't know what else to call it. And I said, what in the heck was that? And that's when the voice said, All these years, you've been teaching that you create your reality with your thoughts. And whatever you choose to believe in, your thoughts will produce evidence to support that belief. And the voice then went on to say, up till now, you always assumed that the sun, the moon, and the stars were fixed features, background features. And I just showed you that they're not. And
wow.
At that point, I was like, whoa. That's pretty cool. Don't do it again.
It's very interesting because, you were saying that you did it, but perhaps it was the source of this voice that did it.
Well, Matt, I don't know if it was the source of the voice, because if you look at, if we're creating, if this is a reality that we are creating with our thoughts and with our feelings, then we're not in a locked, fixed dimension. And there's nothing outside of ourselves that are creating this. Now, you might co-create, like you and I might be co-creating right now. We are co-creating. We're mm-hmm. co-creating the experience of being on the phone, communicating. Now, do we need the phone in order to communicate? Not really. But are both of us really ready to communicate without it?
Well, and will the rest of the 200,000 or so people hear us?
Right. And would they hear us? That's right. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Have we advanced to that level yet? Probably not. I have seen it, though, where I've experienced my horse was dying one night, and he was very, very sick, and I couldn't get a hold of the vet. And I called my boyfriend, and I was like, you've got to call the vet and call me right back. It was, you know, it was Christmas Eve, and like 1 o'clock at night, and I said, call me back as soon as you get a hold of him. He never called me back. Mark went back to sleep. Well, the vet shows up about a half hour, 45 minutes later, and he jumped out of the truck, and he's screaming at me, the next time you call me 3 times about the same damn horse, I'm not coming out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, what? And he said what I said. He repeated to me what I said on the phone. Apparently, the phone rang. He heard my voice, and I said the exact same thing, come quick. And I told him what, you know, my name was and the horse's name and the farm where I was at. And I was like, I never picked up the phone. And later, I've heard of instances where, like, a biker was thrown from his bicycle out in the mountains. He was mountain biking, and he couldn't get a hold of anybody. And the cell phone had been thrown free from him. And he was injured badly, and he couldn't get to the phone. And somehow his son got his phone call, the father's phone call, and his son was in another state, and the voice said exactly where he was located and exactly what had happened, and the guy had been knocked unconscious. There was no way he could have made the phone call. When the paramedics showed up, the phone was like, I don't know, 50 yards away. So how did, you know, obviously we are capable of doing that, but the question are the masses ready for that information and for that knowledge?
Well, it's so interesting. We've had this conversation in so many different ways on the show over the years, because that's it exactly, is that we talk about this stuff and let it be really cool. But, you know, I understand what you're saying about the voice. I've never known what to call it either, but I've got one going on nattering at me for the last 11 years. And, you know, I mean, I've had moments like that transcend what we used to think was our world, the possibilities
right.
and rules of our world. And it's never quite as consoling as we thought it would be. It's usually quite disconcerting.
It is a little disconcerting, and it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you've experienced the sun rising up in the west, or being able to make a phone call without ever touching the phone. And I did learn to go on and practice this and perfect this technique, and I actually teach it to my students in the academy. And they get results. But you have to, there's a series of blocks that you have to remove in order to get to that, tap into that power. But it's frustrating because, you know, the conscious self, the side that, the part of self that we may call ego or whatever, that says they're separate from source, keeps stepping up to the plate and saying, wait a minute, you're not able to do this. So then sure enough, like I say in the laws of attraction, your wish is my command.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you go, well, shoot, it doesn't work, you know, and then you start doubting yourself and thinking you just had an Alzheimer's moment, you know, where you might have just imagined you experienced what you did.
You doubt, and as soon as you doubt, it's over. You're back into 3D land that you've been conditioned to believe in.
That's right. And what I'm here to do, and this is what my book is about, it's called The Master Keykeepers and the Doppelganger. And it is about my experiences in life. Now, there's one twist to my story as, you know, in respect to many metaphysical practitioners who are out there who have shared their personal life story and their personal journey. The twist is, and this is not something I ask anybody to take my word for, it because they won't. Go ahead, doubt me. If I'm wrong, then I've lived an extraordinary life, but if I'm telling the truth, people need to pay attention. but I am here to open the Ark of the Covenant.
The actual Ark.
The actual Ark of the Covenant.
Okay. How do you sense that or know that, and how is that?
Many years ago, when I tried to ride my horses across America, no lie, I found out that it was a lot easier back in the days of the Pilgrim. I got very frustrated, and I said, that's it. What do I do with my life? What am I doing out here? This is absolutely insane. And I had this, I don't want to call it a dream because it wasn't a dream. It was so much more real than that. And Jesus came to me. As a matter of fact, he came to me twice. And the first time he came, he threw a Bible at my feet, and the Bible split across the floor. And I looked at him, and I'm like, oh, man, am I in trouble? Now, mind you, this is a time in my life when I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in Jesus. I was living in the Bible Belt of Georgia. I had been condemned and attacked for my abilities because early on I already showed psychic abilities and other abilities, and people were scared of it. And consequently, I turned away from religion and God and anything that had to do with it. And when I looked at the Bible and it split across the floor past my feet, and I looked back at Jesus, I was like, whoa, you're real. This is real. And Jesus said, you are not to listen to this. You're not to read it ever. You are to follow no man's law but my own. I will teach you. And then the second time Jesus showed up, there were 12 others with him. And I was shown this gold box at the end of this very dark room, and it was probably maybe 20 feet away. And myself and one other were instructed to open this box with a special set of keys that I have thus since had made because of that voice, you know. And that was back in 96. The voice that spoke to me and said, it's time, go have the keys made. And I'm like, get out of death. And there was no one in the room. I was alone. And I went through so much, doubting it, thinking this was just a joke. You know, there's no way. Who am I? I'm just a little 8th grade dropout redneck girl that can chew horses. Go away. I've got some psychic abilities. I am not opening this thing you call the Ark. And through a series of events, I was very well convinced that, yes, in fact, this is what I'm here to do, as well as the other individual. I'm not alone in this. And in 3 years ago, my horse broke my back, and I was going to quit it all. I was going to quit everything, and told the universe, hey, you know what? You want somebody else to open? You want somebody to open the Ark? Find somebody else. I'm not your person. I'm out of here. I hadn't eaten in 3 days. I was in excruciating pain. I had gone from making $2,000 a month to $200 a month. I was raising my daughter by myself. Single mom, she was 13 at the time, and I was like, no way, I can't do this, I can't do it. So I was going to walk in the house and split my wrist, and just as I put my hands on the door to go in there, this white dove, this no lie, Nicole, I have pictures, and if anybody wants to see it, it's, if you go to the 72 Names of God movie on my website, you, at the very last couple of frames, I show a few flashes of this dove that landed on my roof. And the dove landed on the roof, and I opened up the door and I called my daughter. I said, grab the camera, you've got to see this. And she grabbed the camera, and this dove, I thought for sure he was going to fly away. He stood there and let me take pictures of him. I mean, he was like, he was posing for me. I'm going, this is insane. And Angel saw it, and then she went back in the house and she's like, okay, Mom, this is really weird, but you always create weird stuff. I'm getting used to it. She had no idea how close I was ready to commit suicide, and I call it spiritual blackmail. And I know a lot of people in my position have been there, you know, where we just get so frustrated with the whole mess that we say, enough. And when she went back in the house, the stuff stuck around, and he waited until she was gone, and he spoke to me, and he said, it's time. Go write the book. Share your story with the world. And I said, how? I can't afford to even feed myself. And the dove said, ask for sponsorship. Ask for others to support you. And so I did. And for the next 2.5 years, six wonderful, wonderful people, every month sent me whatever they could to help me to keep myself alive while I worked on this book and was able to stand on my own 2 feet.
So how long ago was this, the Dove incident?
That was in, I think it was in 2003. Don't quote me on it. Yeah. I think it was 2003 because it was a year after my mother passed away.
Okay, so I mean it wasn't that long ago. So you've written this book. Mm-hmm. They're telling you it's time and that you're supposed to get the key made. What does that mean?
Well, the keys are already made. If you look on the cover, that's a picture of the real keys. The keys were made in 96. And what I'm getting is that a couple of things. One, that I was given the opportunity to share my story without risk of someone else getting in there and interpreting what they think happened. You know, like they did this to Jesus, they did it to Moses, they did it to Joan of Arc. We don't have the actual writings by those individuals, except, you know, some people claim that they are the, you know, some documents might be the original text, but we have no valid proof of that. And there was a part of me that was afraid that, you know, if this was true, you know, bear in mind, I still have my moments and go, you know, it's like the sun rising up in the west. You go, did that really happen? And, you know, I'm 41 years old. I'm not in a mental institution. You know, I've never had to take psychological drugs or anything like that. I'm of sound mind and body. And I look at it like this, that if I am, in fact, here to open the ark, whenever that's supposed to happen, then I am ready. I have done everything I need to do to be ready. Part of it, I believe, may be more symbolic than actual. Like, I'm not sure that I will actually stand in front of this gold box and all this white light will come flooding out and everyone that's touched by it will be one with the light. It may be that through the work or through the teachings that I have come to share, that I'm somehow going to open the ark within people. But when I saw it in this dream flash vision, it was a very real gold box. And at the time, Nicole, I was 21 when I had this vision. I never even heard of the Ark of the Covenant. I didn't even know what it was. And when I found out, I still had no attachment to it. I didn't care. I was like, yeah, so okay, it's a gold box. So what? And people ask me all the time, well, if you're here to open the Ark, where is it? It's not my job description to know where it is. It's probably to my well-being that I don't. Now, one of the other things I will tell you is that I wasn't the only one who had this vision. The Archbishop Patriarch of North America, Father Ron Nolan, also was given the same vision about us at the exact same time that we had it. And when we finally made contact 13 years later, his words were, we knew you were coming, we just didn't know who you were. And I'm like, whoa, how's that for validation?
Well, that's not bad.
Kind of spooky, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes it from being just in your own mind and just a good movie and just a great adventure to, wow, this is real. And I'm like the least among us. I'll be the first to admit it. I'm not educated, like, you know, Orthodox teachings, or, you know, very unconventional. I dropped out of school, high school in the eighth grade, and decided I would be self-taught, much more effective method for me. And I'm not religious. I'm very spiritual. I break all the rules. I bend them. I do what I can with them. And I bypass them in a lot of ways. And yet, everything that they say that I shouldn't or couldn't do, I've done. And I know how to show others how to do the same thing for themselves. It's not just me. It's not that I have anything anyone else has. It's not that I have something that no one else has. I have what everyone has.
Well, as far as, I mean, how much detail and information has this voice given you as far as what it is or when it is or where it is or what's it for?
The only details I was given, I do know where it is. I mean, as far as, like, if you show me a really dark, dark cave, that's where it is. I couldn't tell you where. I just know it's inside a very dark room that has no walls, it has no doors or windows. And I get that there was a staircase that led into the room. So, and they were going up from where we were at, so I imagine that it's underground. Where, as far as exact location, I have no idea. And that's probably a safety measure that I, you know, that I'm not allowed to know. You know, because I hear stories that he who has the ark wins. You know, and he who has the ark and doesn't know how to open it or shouldn't be messing around with it actually loses, because apparently, and this is something I found out through Graham Hancock's book, The Sign and the Seal, that only those from the tribe of Levi were permitted to handle the ark or wouldn't be struck dead or some such thing. And that's when I did a little background research on my last name and found out that Levi, or Levi, is actually a derivative of the Levite tribe. And I'm like, wow, isn't that interesting? I've got a Jewish last name, a Christian mother, a Jewish father, a metaphysical. This is going to really irritate some people.
You've got it covered, yeah. Now,
yeah.
What was the...
And I'm white and I'm a redneck, you know, I'm a cowgirl. Come on.
And a girl.
You know, it's like you could not get any crazier or worse than this, you know.
You're testing all the stereotypes. Now...
Yeah, that's it. It's breaking all the stereotypes.
Yeah. Now, what was the last or the most recent message that you received from this voice?
The last time I had the voice speak to me was technically through the dub, and that was when I was told to write the book. And then it went away. And when I asked, "What happened? Where are you? Why aren't you? You know, why aren't you guiding me anymore?" I was told that because I was now at a point where I was my own guide, I didn't need it anymore. And it was a relief, and at the same time a little disconcerting, because now I realized that I was that voice, where that some part of me had merged and become one with that, where I no longer needed external validation or external guidance as I once did. And a lot of people do, you know, when they start experiencing stuff on this level, you almost have to have a guide of some sort. And now I'm getting that I am at one. I have obtained a level. I mean, I'm not walking on water. I'm just like the next person. I'm out there, you know, having to plug away and go to work. And you know, I've done my duty raising my daughter, and she's now 18 and trying to do her job of being a great creator out in the world. But now I'm being given permission to do what I really came here to do, and it's not so hard anymore. And I think that's the key. When your life starts being so hard, that's when you know you're getting there. That's when you know you're doing the God's work or what you came here to do. And I think for all of us, the most important message to get is, doesn't matter what your background is, doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, or what your financial situation is, if you want to really get what you're doing here in this world, you're here to create. This is a playground. This is not the real thing. This isn't the real deal. Can you imagine taking your child and handing them all the abilities that you have as an adult and turning them loose in the world at 5 years old?
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't happen, right? You wouldn't do that to your
child. One would hope.
Yeah. Well, neither would God. And if you and I are God goddesses and we are made in God's image, as everyone seems to claim, then we are empowered with all the same abilities, the same qualities. But, and it's not to say that what we create here doesn't matter. It just means stop taking it so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a practice ground. This is where you guys get to screw it all up and fix it, fix your errors, and become a better master creator. Master the laws of attraction. It goes beyond the laws of attraction. It's not just attracting things into your life that you want. It's manifesting them. See, the laws of attraction are step one. Step two is you start manifesting it. You're no longer attracting anything in your sacred space. You are creating it. And that's the next level. Maybe that's the message.
I want to give out your website again as we're going here, mastersofsedona.com. Vision Quest's greatest adventure, 4 days in a cave.
you starve to death and stay in a dirty old cave.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to say, probably quite another to really conceive of. That's day and night, 4 days in a cave alone, correct?
Yeah.
Any food, anything with them?
I let some people cheat, and sometimes I test them. I'll stick a candy bar or something in the emergency kit and see if it's still there when I get them. And, you know, you don't have to fast the whole time. We do ask it because most people, if you really want to push somebody's buttons, tell them they can't eat for 4 days. But most people don't realize you don't need food. And that's one way to get beyond that idea that you need these certain things in order to, quote-unquote, survive. Now, the other part of it, too, is when you're not eating and you know you can't eat, then you got to get busy and get focused on what you're doing there instead of looking forward to that next meal.
So there's no distractions.
I'm sorry?
So there's no distractions.
Right, no distractions. Just you, the universe, the big blue sky, and a couple of bats in the cave.
Nice.
Actually, the bat will leave. If you show up, the bats go away.
Oh, good.
But we do have, we've had white wolves walk up and visit our questers. We've had elk and, you know, of course, the eagles, different totems, animal totems, spiritual guides will show up while the questers out there. So far, nobody's ever been eaten by any of them, which is a good thing.
Have you ever had anyone freak out?
You know what? No, we don't. And here's why. Part of the preparation work that we do involves a very intense sweat lodge, a lot of counseling, time on the molecular enhancer, which helps to raise your spiritual vibrations and prepare you for the next 4 days. We also do rebirthing. And all of this is clearing work designed to see if somebody's really ready for this. And I've had one person who wasn't ready. And so I took her to one of our local shamans, Jade Wahoo, and had her go in his lodge. And he runs a spiritual warrior lodge. And I told him, I said, Jade, I need your help. She hit the ground with my lodge, and I was running a very easy lodge, but I told her, I said, if you can't get through a lodge, you're not going to make it out there in a cave. And to her credit, it was great. That would have been the most comical, best sweat lodge I ever been to. She actually made it through the most intense sweat lodge. I was ready to leave the lodge. It was so intense.
Oh, my.
And she wrote it out. I looked at her. I was like, you're going to be just fine. And this is a 50-year-old woman whose greatest camping experience was going to a local KOA with her family in an RV. You know, and when we were taking her out to the cave, she looked at me and Michael, and she's like, I've got a question, and it sounds crazy, but how do you pee in the woods? I'm like, oh, God, we're in trouble.
Wow.
But she did it. And, you know, when she came out, and this was a woman who was 50 years old, just recently divorced after 38 years of marriage and being a mom and a homemaker. She's never had a job in her life. She's never lived on her own. And she's never acted as an individual outside the family unit. And she went basically right from her parents' home into her husband's home. And this woman came out of that cave. Oh, my God. I was on my knees in front of her. I said, you did it. You did it. You are amazing. And she was so empowered. And she went back to Atlanta, ended up manifesting all this great stuff for herself, got a job right away, and last time I spoke to her, she was just ecstatic about how well she is handling life on her own. And the surprising thing is we get a lot of women that are in their 40s, their 50s, their 60s. It's not the younger generation so much as it is in my generation, our generation, that we're all going, wow, you know, we want to empower ourselves, and we want the quickest route possible, because now we don't have any choice. And this gives them an avenue of empowerment.
Well, that's amazing. That sounds wonderful. And Masters Vision Quest Adventures is what it's called. The website, again, mastersofsedona.com. It's hard to cram all of this into a segment with you. There's so much. Absolutely wonderful. It's been a joy. The book, again, The Master Key Keepers and the Doppelganger. What the heck is the doppelganger part of that story?
The doppelganger was my mother. I was informed, or wrongly informed, was the other key keeper. And when she actually turned out to be my test, She was murdered, and it's a very little bit long story. You have to read the book to hear how that happened, but she was murdered by her own hand. And I was incomplete with her, and I hadn't really recovered from her death, and she borrowed a girlfriend of mine, who's now a very good friend of mine's body, and when this woman just showed up at my door, and it was my mother all over again. And she walked into my life, and her name is Elsie, and she's also written about in a book, and she helped me complete and heal all that I had left incomplete with my mom. And a doppelganger is a German word for a double.
Yes.
Somebody who is deceased, and then they're like somebody else shows up in your life and they look just like the deceased person. So that's what a doppelganger is.
Okay, well, the master key keepers and the doppelganger, that just gets more and more bizarre every time I ask a question.
I think I'm probably going to get the craziest interview award, huh?
Well, it's, we talk to a lot of quote-unquote crazy people. So myself included, we're all nuts and
we're
happy to be
crazy.
So.
you got to be a little crazy to be able to enjoy the ride, you know?
Well, because crazy means stepping out of the conditioning box that we've been crammed into from birth. So, you know, that's really what we're saying when we say crazy. We're rediscovering the real reality. So it's been a trip spending some of that time with you here today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. It's been wonderful.
Virginia Levy, find her at mastersofsedona.com. Go sit in a cave for a few days. Let me know how it goes. It sounds like an adventure, to be sure. So, and don't go away, because we've got our next guest for the soul coming to you right after this.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience a process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can. Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. Regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satyen Raja of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing 5-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right. The tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyen says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to illuminationintensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's illuminationintensive.com.
In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. That's InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. Attention indigos, healers, cultural creatives, and agents of social change. Are you ready to act upon your inner wisdom and step forward into your life purpose? With 16 years of hands-on real-world results, empowerment specialist Robert Moonsong is available to help as a visionary guide to authentic spiritual growth and awakening. To subscribe for free or find out about upcoming teleclasses, visit robertmoonsong.com now. That's robertmoonsong.com.
It's not just a show. It's a movement. You're listening to News for the Soul, the number one life-changing radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL, and the largest free life-changing audio resource on the web. We feature the top luminaries in the evolution of human consciousness and have kept all of our shows all free, all of the time, for the world to hear. In a recent listener survey, News for the Soul listeners responded with overwhelming appreciation and praise, which they summarized with this one powerful statement. News for the Soul is not just a show, it's a movement. Go to newsforthesoul.com to see for yourself. That's newsforthesoul.com.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
That unresolved fear in my father had come down to this little boy, who also carried those fears with him. So we're the product of many generations of insecurities and so on.
So you actually, what I hear you say is you actually process through on an emotional issue and...
I'm finished with that particular issue.
Done.
Yeah, and I went through a myriad of experiences. I mean, in the course of 4 hours, 20, 30, 40 things may come up from your life. You know?
So it was like therapy in a cup?
It's therapy. Yeah.
All right, that's pretty interesting.
It's therapy in a cup.
So what I was trying to understand, though, I mean, it was specific things, about real issues in your life. It wasn't like this abstract acid trip.
Oh, no. I mean, for example, I have a friend who injured her hip dancing. And in the ayahuasca journey, these beings came and literally repaired her hip.
Physically?
Physically. Like, she never had the hip problem ever again.
If you consider that there is a possibility that the brain of humans is common knowledge that humans use a very small percentage of their brain.
Some of us smaller than others.
Radio from the uplifting to the unexplained, and our next guest, you've heard of him undoubtedly, Conversations with God, author and visionary behind the Humanities Team, Neil Donald Walsh, is here with us talking about the Humanities Team. Let's bring him on. Welcome back to News for the Soul, Neil Donald Walsh.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. Left open. So you're right. You're profoundly correct. And while this is not an appropriate time to be deeply critical of what's happening down there in the Gulf area, it is an opportunity for us to receive the message that this tragedy has brought to humanity. Life, you know, is a process that brings life messages about life itself. Life informs life about life through the process of life itself.
Hello, and we are delighted to be here in the land of much light, for indeed we feel most delightful to be with those who are able to hold, see, be, and offer light to many. We welcome and say hello to you.
Hello.
Yay.
We had a question from Hank in Texas. He wants to know if we can really, truly, honest to goodness, levitate.
Yeah.
How do we levitate?
By realizing that the air that you perceive is an illusion. It's not air. It can be just as much earth as anything else. In other words, create it for what it is. See it for the solid that you perceive it to be. Change your perception of it. And then simply move up. 19 individuals throughout the planet that are actually, at this moment, levitating.
That means that we can do anything.
Yeah. You've walked on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't you walk on air? What's to stop you?
See, it's the mind that's stopping us.
Exactly. Your mind. Start taking over your mind. Start commanding your mind. And you'll find that your existence will change.
So you're saying we can walk on water?
Yeah.
Seminars
How would you summarize the Sark philosophy?
The Sark philosophy is... That's a great question. It's about being who you actually are instead of who you idealize that you would be, or it's about being creatively alive and all that that means, and investigating your dark places, and as I always remind people, you can use a flashlight, and being splendidly imperfect, and giving yourself permission to live what I call a juicy life, a succulent wild life.
And everyone gets a unique name, and I feel into that. I use my intuition to draw upon a name which suits that person.
Most people in that room later had said it was like you were seeing into them. So how did you perfect that skill?
Boy, when you do a lot of work on yourself, and I've been involved in studying with great teachers and masters since I've been a kid, when you learn more about every which way your own mind and ego and your own shells work, and then when you've helped facilitate people, which I've done now for over 20 years, then just your intuition with people develops. And you've seen me work, Nicole. I really love people, and I think you can learn all the techniques in the world, but unless you love someone, you're not really going to get to the truth of them.
It was Terrence McKenna who said, to have a great experience with ayahuasca, you have to take a big dose. And I really wanted to have that ultimate death God experience. And, you know, again, he didn't speak English, but he did say, he turned to the interpreter and said, Una boca grande, which I knew what he was saying. Yeah, the big glass. There's chanting, he's blessing the ayahuasca, we're putting our intention into it, and more intense. I'm kneeling in front of this, you know, roughly carved altar, and I see the Boca Grande, you know. I mean, it is 3 to 4 times the size of what he's given everyone else. I was sweating. I mean, my heart was beating. I was thinking, okay, you know, do I really want to do this? Did you get sick when you took it?
Well, it's interesting. That's what I was saying. It was all about letting go. And when I didn't know I was going to drink until the shaman handed me the cup, and I actually sipped.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to not do something out of fear, and I had so much apprehension coming up. The same thing for me. It has to be really reverent and safe and, you know, ceremonial, and it's not, you know. And I couldn't discern if it was the fear voice or not. So once I did sip, I decided, okay, that's it. Nothing's coming out of any orifice whatsoever. So I walked down.
And he said something about he'd been getting sick, you know, every time he'd take it. I mean, and a lot of people do, and the shaman will tell you that's how you purge. You know, that's how you're purging those negative energies out of your body. And so, you know, some people purge out of, you know, without getting too... Well, here we go. Purge out of both ends simultaneously. I mean, it's not a pretty sight. I had this real thing. I had never once gotten sick. Anytime I'd taken ayahuasca, I just had not gotten sick. And I made that comment to him in the afternoon, and the moment I said it, I thought, you know what? I should have not said it. You know, because I was almost like wearing it like a badge of courage, which that had to go to. So here I am, I drink this big glass, and you know, I knew that within about 45 minutes, it takes a little while to come on, within 45 minutes, under an hour, I'd be jettisoned into this geometric dome. Here I am in this fractal dome, and all of a sudden, my stomach is turning knots. I mean, I'm flashing back and forth between out-of-body, in-body, my stomach's turning knots, and I'm thinking, no, I'm going to control this, just breathe, my body's shaking, I'm trying to ground myself on the ground. I've got my hands, you know, on the jungle floor, laying on this little rice mat, and I am getting sick. His voice said to me, you know what, James, get over yourself and let it go, you know. And I was like, I don't want to get sick. I don't get sick, you know. I don't get sick, you know. I'm James Ray. And you know, get over yourself. You get sick and let it go. I'm like, okay. So I open my eyes, and I have stuck myself way back in the corner in the maloka so I could kind of be in my own energy space. And I tried to sit up. I fell down. I had no motor skills. And I'm like, gosh, you know, not only am I going to have to get sick, but I'm going to have to get carried out into the jungle. You know, I'm going to have to call for help. And, you know, I don't want to do that. It was such crap. It really was. And finally, I was just like, you know what? Just get over it and do whatever you need to do and humble yourself and get your butt out there and get sick if that's what you need to do. And if you need to get carried, get carried. The moment I released that, I was able to sit up. I couldn't stand up, but I had to crawl. So I'm crawling on my hands and knees, and it felt like a block. I mean, I don't know how long it was, but it was far. And I'm crawling on my hands and knees trying to hold myself together. I finally get out onto the jungle floor, and it just starts. I mean, not only do I get sick, but I am like heaving, and it's loud, and it's, I mean, it's and it felt so damn good. I can't even tell you. And you know, the shaman tell you that if you really, really get this big release, that a serpent will come out of you. Well, I swear to you, this black projectile came out of me, and it was a snake, and it went onto the jungle floor, and it slithered away, and I was like, oh my God. I mean, it was so black and so solid and so alive. And when I got done, I'm all humble, and I'm kneeling on the jungle floor, and I look up, I can see the stars, and I just felt so good. I'm like, you know, this was the coolest thing, just getting over myself and letting it go. And I needed to. I really did.
My job fell apart, my income fell apart, my sense of self fell apart when, as I mentioned earlier, I was the subject of fantastic, unprecedented, I have to say, and I'm not exaggerating, ridicule in this country of one person in the early 90s. And everything that was my sense of me, that was my sense of the security of this is what I am and this is my security, financial, in terms of employment, in terms of the way the public perceived me, not with respect as they did before, but as a madman. All that fell apart. All that structure of what I thought I was collapsed. And only when it collapsed could the other level of me come forward and start to take me in a different direction. Because if you really wanted to go for it, then it will happen. But then comes the challenge. When things get difficult, don't walk away. Keep with it. Because what's happening, although it's not very pleasant, is that the you that has held you in, or the perception of you which has held you in the prison cell, in servitude, is breaking down. Let it go. Let it break down. Because when it's gone, something is going to emerge through the wreckage that you're going to like.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Hello, everybody. This is Daniel Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Enfoldment. This is News for the Soul.
This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.